The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Have you ever noticed that sometimes life just feels easier? Especially when judgment of you or anyone else ceases to exist. What if you could function from that space all the time? What if gratitude is the key? Every time you are grateful for someone or something, a new universe opens up. What difference can you create in your life and the world from the energy, space, and consciousness of gratitude? Here are the hosts of Beyond Saying Thank You.
Hello, everybody. This is Ann Maxwell today, and I'm going to be doing the radio show with one of my favorite people in the whole world, Ricky Williams. Hey, Ricky.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, I'm so happy to be doing a radio show with you again. And for the listeners out there, I just want you to know that Ricky was one of my first hugest inspiration source of me, like early on when I, like a couple years ago, and he and I did a radio show together, and I don't know, Ricky, this, you saw something in me that I actually didn't see at the time, and we did the radio show every week, and there were times where I did it by myself and times where I had other guests, but most of the time you and I did it, and it was what you gave me was one of the greatest gifts anybody's ever given me, which was really the space to be who I am. And you always had my back. Like whenever I faltered or said something silly or whatever, you never judged me. You would laugh and the show would go on. And it was just one of the first times that on a really consistent basis, I had the experience of being with somebody who didn't judge me and who had my back. And I'm going to cry. So thank you so much. And I'm happy to be with you again. So, and one of the things that Ricky and I have in common is a love for kids and the capacity to get them really energetically, intuitively, like instantly. And it's one of the things that I love about being with you and about talking with you. And so the topic today, a new take on child development, is something that I'm really excited to explore with you. And I just, you know, at what point, there were so many points of view about what was appropriate, certainly when I was growing up and when I was being trained in my field and in my career. And one of the great gifts of the Tools of Access Consciousness has been to break free of a lot of the shoulds and the have-tos and to be able to apply a different take and a different way of viewing kids that's easier and kinder on everybody. So welcome, Ricky. I'm really happy to have you here.
Yes. Well, thanks for having me. And the way this kind of came up is I'm back at the University of Texas taking classes, and I mentioned to Anne I was taking some child development classes. And it's interesting being in school and seeing in academia so much of their data and their quote-unquote facts are found through research. And one of the things that anyone who's spent a lot of time at university or doing research, it's all about averages. And it's like when you function that way, what you're doing is you're really trying to create kids and create people as being average or normal. And for me, when I really talk to people, I'm yet to talk to someone, well, maybe one kid I talked to a couple of weeks ago, that actually wants to be average and normal and like everyone else.
Yeah, you know, I'm so glad you said that. In school, I always did pretty well. And the one subject that I came close to failing was research. And the whole, now that you said that the whole thing is about being normal, average, and real, that's a lot of what school teaches us, is that's actually how the statistical curves go, right? You take out the lows and you take out the highs, and what you base your results on is what's in the middle.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. And yeah, and the thing about kids that I've known early, like even when I was 4 years old, I used to be the one that could soothe the babies that were crying. I remember my mom telling me that there were twins that were crying one day, and neither of their parents nor anybody else could comfort them. And she put them in my lap. She sort of propped them up on pillows and stuff like that, and they stopped crying almost instantly. And there's something about being the space for kids it's almost like acknowledge. I don't even know how to talk about it without using stupid words, but you meet them where they are, and you really don't have any judgments or points of view about what they're doing, what they're choosing, whether they're crying, whether they're happy or whatever. It's really like the hi, and wherever you are is just fine with me. You don't have to be any other place, right? Like that.
Well, even that phrase, I'm sure for a lot of people, sounds strange to meet a child where they are. Because I think a lot of the times, we rarely have the question of, huh, I wonder where this child is right now. It's usually a reaction or an assumption that either something is wrong, or if I don't do something, then something is going to go wrong.
I mean, that is, yeah.
One of the things that I learned about kids, it's not really so much about kids, but more about adults when they're around kids. And it's the idea that if you leave kids to their own, that somehow they're going to get in trouble, or they're going to destroy something, or there's going to be chaos.
Yeah, and which is so funny because there's so many things that are just flipping through my head right now. But when I ask kids, what do you know, or what's up, or what is that, or where are you, it provides them with a space to be wherever they are, it provides them with a space from which they can function without feeling like they're wrong or they're being stupid or there's something that they have to like fix, right? It's like, hey, what's up? It's such a different question from what's wrong or why are you doing that? Or, you know, like that. I was just, was flooding through me right now. So I'm just going to tell this story. I was in Copenhagen in June, and a friend of ours, Blossom Benedict, was doing a class, and there were probably 100 or more people. It was the first evening, and it was in a hotel room that was a basement room. So there was no natural light. And it was, the ceiling was low, and it was packed, filled with people. And the name of the class is Right Voice for You. And the class is all about being seen and being heard, finding your voice in the world. And one of the things that Blossom does in her classes is she invites people to come up on the stage and sing or dance or do whatever it is that they would like to do. So it was literally filled with 100 people or more who were nervous about whether they were called up on the stage. And the energy in the room was just like off the charts. And there was a little boy who was not quite 2 years old. He was about a year and a half, almost not quite two. And he didn't want to go in the room. And he was screaming at the top of his lungs. And it was like this, it was this blood-curdling scream. And it was really evident. And there were a lot of people who went up and tried to fix him and make him feel better and talk him into coming in the room and telling him it wasn't going to be so bad and blah, blah, blah. And he would have none of it. The more people came up to him, the louder he got. And Blossom was wonderful. She said, so what is that bringing up for you guys? Like, because it is really clear to me that he is not going to be coming in this room, and he's letting everybody that know that he's not going to do it. And when you were his age and you didn't want to do something and people didn't listen to you, were you allowed to scream like that, right? Were you allowed to be seen and be heard and have your voice heard and have people actually get it and listen to you? And you could feel the relief in the room go down a little bit. But the combination of everybody's nerves plus this screaming was something that was just off the charts. And as everybody sort of calmed down when they remembered that, and not no one in the room was allowed or given permission to scream like that. It was really interesting. This thing about kids not being worth listening to or heard is something that's pretty pervasive.
Yes, I mean that's extremely pervasive. I know when I was a kid, it really was very little about what was going on for me. It was really all about what was going on for my mom and kind of how I had to be to not be, you know, yelled at or screamed or hit by my mom. And it's such a different situation, a different reality when you allow kids to get a sense of themselves.
So, Ricky, you've got kids. So how do you do that? How do you give your kids a sense of themselves?
Well, for me, the greatest tool has been to ask the question. And, it's very easy, especially, you know, when you work and you come home, you know, from a hard day or you're stressed about money or whatever is going on in your life. And then, you know, there's a kid who's upset or a kid who's screaming. It's so easy to just react. And
right. Even
for me, when I find myself getting frustrated or getting upset, I just ask, okay, well, what question can I ask? And it doesn't even really matter for me what the question is. You know, if I hear, because there's that scream that you hear where you think, like, the world's going to end or like, they just
walk, they're
off limb. And then you get up and you see that they just dropped, like, two drops of water on the ground. And you're like, what the? So for me, I'll ask the question. I'll ask, you know, like, what has happened that's so horrible that you have to scream like you lost a limb? And
right.
what's really great about my kids is they'll answer the question. They'll say, I spilled some water.
Right.
And from there, you know, we can have a conversation about it. But I find when I react by, you know, some kind of, you know, punishment, it doesn't really get anywhere. But I see if I can ask a question, really allows us to have a conversation where I get more awareness about what's going on with me, and they get more awareness about what's going on with them. And from there, it seems like things are so much easier to deal with.
Yeah, and a lot of, I don't know, I just find that kids function at a lot of them, most of them, at the speed of light, space, whatever, just, and their words don't necessarily, their verbal capacity doesn't really keep up with them. And so often they can't explain or describe what it is that's going on. But if you can ask them a question that can give them the space to be in so that they can start, like you're talking about, things just dissipate. It's almost like in my practice, one of the things that I've been really aware of is that behavior is a form of communication. And so if one of the first questions that I ask when parents and kids come in to see me with behaviors that are over the edge, it's like, what is this? What are they saying? Not that they're saying, I hate you, you're a crappy mom, but like, what is that? What's going on? What is that? So asking a question really seems to be an awesome way of connecting with them or getting to whatever it is that's going on.
Another thing I found is when I ask my kids a question, it gets them to start to value what they know and not
awesome.
Only place value in what I say or the rules or whatever's going on. So last night, I have a 12-year-old son, and he's starting, he just started seventh grade. So he got more homework than he's ever had, and it's kind of complicated stuff that he's dealing with. And so, you know, he's playing football, so it was after practice, and it was about 9:30, 10 o'clock last night, and he's going over his vocabulary words, and you can just tell by his body language that he just wants to go to sleep. And so, you know, every time I noticed that when I'd ask him a question, in his mind, he would start beating himself up because he didn't have the right answer or the right way to explain what the vocabulary word was. So I asked him, I said, so why is what you don't know more valuable than what you do know? And I asked him, what do you know? And when I asked him that, you could tell he kind of perked up, and he started to explain what he did know, and lo and behold, he knew exactly what the words meant.
Yeah.
So And it's so different because I just see it. Anytime he can't get it exactly right the way the teacher said it, he feels defeated. And so getting him to look at what he does know really, really made a big difference. And I know as he starts to value what he knows more than he values what he doesn't know, everything becomes so much easier for him.
And that's that. What a gift you are to him, because this school is spends so much time and energy and effort in being right and not being wrong, right? And so there's this huge emphasis on being wrong. And I just remember a friend of our, Gary Douglas, the founder of Access, saying to me one time, what if you begin to acknowledge the gift that you are and the things that you've done that have created massive change rather than continue to focus on everything that you haven't been able to do yet or that you tried to do that didn't work out in its time. And it really, it shifted a lot. It shifted a lot for me. And I know that I learned that lesson early on about not wanting to be wrong, right? So awesome. Yeah. Awesome. 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 So he's in middle school now. And that's a whole different, I just, it seems as if in the school years, they're like first grade is a kindergarten or whenever you go to school is really a shock because it's not home anymore. It's a whole different set of rules. And then in the third grade, you can't fake it. Like first and second grade, typically you can pretty much fake it through. But third grade, you actually have to either have the right answer or not, you know, or spell it or not. And then seventh grade is huge because it's middle school and it's so different from elementary school, and then high school is another big year. And it just seems like the changes that kids go through developmentally are so massive. And I just want to bring a little bit of sort of regular stuff in. There are several psychiatrists and psychologists over the years, neurologists who have done these developmental. Had these developmental points of view about kids and emotional development and social development and physical and cognitive and blah blah blah, all the different kinds of development, and typically the stages range from anywhere from 7 to 8 stages in a lifetime, and 5 of those happen before the age of 21, and adolescence starts at age 13. So from birth to age 12, there are 4 developmental stages that a child goes through, and then from the time you're 21 on, you only go through another 2 by the time you die. I mean, just to put it in terms of, it's almost like in relative terms, the changes are huge. The body changes, the brain changes, the physical capacities, the verbal capacities, like all that kind of stuff. So
it's funny you said that. I just was about to mention, you know, that kids usually have this willingness to change that you do not see in adults. And like you mentioned, I think part of the reason that is because there's so much change going on. And what I find is, you know, it's easy as adults, you know, when you meet another adult and they behave a certain way to make the assumption that they're always going to be this way. And I think we make a huge mistake of treating kids the same way. Whereas with my son, you know, like last year, he didn't like school. He didn't like to study. He didn't like to do his homework. He didn't like to do any of those things. And so if we would still be functioning based on how he was last year, I can see how we'd make it so much more difficult for him to be who he is today in this moment. And, you know, giving him the space to choose what he's going to choose, you know, without us making rules or harping on him on his own, he's chosen that he's going to, you know, be more present with school and with schoolwork. And it's
cool.
So amazing to see the willingness to change, and some people would say improve, but it's based on what he was aware of, not based on what we doubted he was aware of or what we doubted or thought he wouldn't choose.
Yeah. So, Ricky, let's really pick back up there. We're going to take a quick break right now, but let's pick back up with change and choice and the capacity that kids have to change with such ease, just like you're talking about. So we'll be right back, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
What if the world doesn't function the way we've been told? What if we truly can bend the laws of physical reality? What if we can end limitation? What if weird were the coolest thing you could be? And what if it's time for a totally different reality? Are you ready to create it? Are you ready to dream as big as you dare? Hi, my name is Dane here. 13 years ago, I started to truly ask questions. Actually, I started to be the question, and everything in my life changed for me. This is your invitation to step into something that Einstein, Marie Curie, Newton, Da Vinci, Shakespeare, Gandhi, Galileo, and Aristotle all knew to be true. It's not about the answer. It's about being the question, always. It's about truly being you, whatever that looks like, and changing this world. Is now the time? Start by signing up for a free video series at beingyouclass.com. That's beingyouclass.com. What if you are the gift and the change this world requires? Beingyouclass.com.
Time to celebrate. September is Pragmatic Psychology, the book's crazy happy first birthday. How does it get any better than this? Thousands of people have read the book and let us know about all the change showing up in their lives from using the tools in the book. How better to celebrate a birthday than with some gifts? You are invited for a free taster telecall on September 17th. To join, sign up on www.susannahmittermeier.accessconsciousness.com. Welcome to enjoy the book and the worldwide classes. More information on susannahmittermeier.com/pragmatic psychology.
You are listening to Beyond Saying Thank You, presented by Access Consciousness. To join in today's conversation, call us toll-free in North America at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. Or send an email to radio@beyondsayingthankyou.com. Now, back to Beyond Saying Thank You.
Hey, everybody, we're back again. It's Ann Maxwell and Ricky Williams. Hey, Ricky.
Hey, what's up, babe?
Hey, I'm so happy to be talking with you about all this stuff. And where we left off is a place that I would love to spend some time, which is talking about kids and change and choice and the capacity for kids to change so much more quickly than adults actually can. And I had never thought about it in terms of the developmental changes and the physical and cognitive and emotional and all the changes that people go through.
Well,
you know,
it's interesting. It's one of the things that I've noticed since I started taking Access Consciousness classes a couple of years ago is you start to meet people and you literally see them change physically in front of your face. And when I started doing Access, it was like I'd go to a class and I'd see a person, and then I, you know, see them again in a class 3 months later, and they looked like they were literally different people. And it, when I saw that, it reminded me of the kind of change that kids are willing to have.
Yeah. And the kind of change that they're, I mean, their bodies go through so much change, like, all the time. Like, I work with kids, a lot of them are between the ages of, I don't know, 4 or 5 and 11 or 12. And even in a, like, they come in with new school clothes, you know. And by the time November rolls around, they're all in flood pants and their skirts are too short. And they just grow like weeds, you know. And so, you know, change is just a natural part of their life. It's part of being alive. If you're a kid, you change a lot.
What I noticed as a parent is a lot of the ways I was parenting was actually limiting that amount of change and that amount of, we'll call it, growth. And I think a lot of parents do this is we buy these points of views about what kids are capable of and what kids aren't capable of. And we rarely have the question, I wonder what kids are capable of. I mean, I have a daughter who's 8 and she's now in the third grade. She just turned 8. And I remember last year, it was like every day last year was about the mean girl in school and how she was going to deal with her. And this year, you know, the second day of school, and she's telling the story about the mean girl, and she said, you know what I learned from all this? And I said, what? She said that she's just a drama queen. And she laughed. and it was so amazing because I think most people don't really think that a 7 or 8 year old could really grasp the concept to not take things personally and to look at what actually is. But if you, and it's one of the things that I've always done, and just have always asked my children questions and really spoke to them. Basically, I would use different words, but the same way I'd speak to my friends, and not thinking that this is something they can't understand or they can't grasp, but just to throw it out there and to see what sticks and what doesn't.
They totally get it. And it's one of the things that I love about kids is how much more they know than they're ever given credit for. And it's like they're like little stealth bombers, you know, because kids learn early on. Most kids do to like be quiet, or otherwise they're going to be ridiculed or made fun of. But once in a while, they'll throw something out that's just like right on the money, unless they are smart enough to pick parents like you and their moms, so that they get that they can, you know, parents who ask them questions and who ask them to participate in their life and to be who they are and to have a say in it. And it doesn't mean because you ask a kid a question that you have to give them everything that they want. But I think that's one of the sort of the lies of kids, children should be seen and not heard. That was one of the sayings that was really prevalent when I was growing up. And I wasn't asked, what do you think, or what do you know, or what would you like? It was, you're going to do this, and you can do it the hard way or the easy way, but you're going to do it, right? And there was no, right? There's no choice in there. And I don't imagine it was too much different for you either, right?
No, not at all. It was my mom's way or the highway or the...
Right.
The
switch.
Graveyard. No. So,
so right.
It's great. Which, you know, and just talking about the way that children develop, it's controversial and we talk about this a lot, but the more I look at it, I really get the awareness that it really seems like my children chose me as their parent. And really looking at it, just playing with that point of view, it's really made parenting and it's really made my allowance with my children so much more a part of our relationship. And it's not, and I don't ever feel like they belong to me or they're my possession. I mean, obviously, you know, my children, you can see a physical resemblance. But so much of who they are, of who they be, is really about them and has very little to do with me.
Yeah. You know, it is a controversial idea that somehow kids pick their parents, and it's something I've worked for years with all different kinds of families, with families who are raising their naturally born children. And a lot of families who have either one birth parent or no birth parents, kids being raised by either relatives or in foster care or who've been adopted. And with the adoptions, they're transracial adoptions and all different kinds. And what I'm aware of, I see the differences. I see the different colors. I see the different facial features. I recognize the wrinkle lines of the grandparents and the with the 4-year-olds and the 5-year-olds. It's like I see all of that, but it has never had much meaning to me. And there's a lot of meaning and sort of significance that's placed on that in a lot of the trainings that I received on my way to becoming a child therapist and a family therapist. And one of the things that I ask parents is, what if, you know, is there a difference between your being and your body? And they get that, like your being, another way of talking about that is your soul or that part of you that goes on forever or whatever. And they say, yeah. And then the question, what if you go to God or you go to the universe and you say, okay, I want to come back. And God or the universe says, okay, great. So what body do you want? So we all pick our bodies. And then God or the universe says, so what parents would you like? And we pick our parents, and some of us pick direct routes, and others of us pick pretty circuitous routes. Some of us pick two parents and stick with them. Others of us pick two parents to be born to and then just pick one parent, somebody to raise them, or some people have multiple parents or whatever. But when I say that to people, they're all these judgments that they've had on themselves about being inadequate or insufficient really just dissipate. And there was one, I'll tell the story really quickly. There was one mom who, she and her husband adopted a little girl who was actually her husband's half-sister. The dad was a drug addict and an alcoholic, and the little girl at the age of 2 was found roaming the streets, the dad having killed himself, overdosing on drugs, and she was feral. I mean, she was just wild. And this mom took her in, and the little girl did fine with everybody except the mom. So fast forward 6 years later, when she brought her into me at the age of 8, I didn't find any of the behaviors that the mom described between the two of them with me. And I mentioned that to the mom, and I asked her about picking parents. I said, what if she actually chose you, and what if this was the only way she could get to you? And she came back a week later, and she started to cry again, and she said, you know, I never realized how hard she had to fight to get to us. And when I got that she really did actually choose us, she said, I had always thought she was a problem that needed to be fixed, but when I stopped viewing her as a problem, she stopped being a problem. And she said, the last week, we've been cuddling with each other in a way that I didn't even think would ever be possible for us. And it's like all this stuff about how families are made and the right way to do it and the wrong way to do it. And if you do it the wrong way, it affects you for the rest of your life and blah, blah, blah. It's like all that stuff disappears in the face of what Ricky, you and I talk a lot about, which is that people actually choose their lives. They create their lives and they choose them, right?
Right. And to me, what that brings up is how, what I've noticed is kids, for the most part, think that they're powerless to change things.
Right.
And you know, because one, they're so small and they're looking up at the world around them. And two, because most people have the point of view that kids don't know. And it's like, wow. And for me, it's like, what would it take to change all of that, to reverse all of that? So it's like, wow. Like, how many points of views have been used to stunt or limit our growth and our development as children?
Right.
And how many of those are we still dealing with to this day as adults?
You want to know some? You know, I think there are developmental stages and then there are tasks that go along with each developmental stage. And if in order to move successfully from one, what I got taught is in order to move successfully from one developmental stage to the next, you have to complete the task of the stage that you're in. And if you don't complete the task, you move anyway because you move chronologically, you know, you move based on your age. And in fact, I think a lot of adult therapy is about going back and redoing some of that stuff that didn't get done the first time, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And it's awesome. So, yeah. We can talk, the one for school age kids is to develop competency. You know, the one for kids ages 6 to 12 is to become competent. And if you are able to complete that task by the time you're 12, you have a sense of what's known as self-esteem, but you feel pretty good about yourself, and you're willing to try new things and, you know, take things on. And you think about kids that age from 6 to 12, and those are all the, like, little league kids and the dance class kids and the gymnastics kids and all that kind of stuff, and the brainiacs and the, you know, the readers and the writers and all that kind of stuff. And then for kids that don't develop that, what they end up with is this pervasive sense of emptiness and inadequacy and not being good enough. But that's one of the most damaging things, I think, about telling kids that they're wrong or that they're disabled or that they have problems that they need to fix. I mean, in addition to being inherently unkind, when you do that to kids between that age and that developmental stage, it's like double jeopardy. You can really harm them, right?
Yeah. And you know, I get that so much of this conversation we're having is not really just about, you know, parents or educators who work with kids, but it's really about each one of us, because each one of us at some point were children. And one of the things that I've really embraced as a parent is, instead of, you know, trying to be like my mom, but really looking at, okay, like, how would I really have liked to have been raised by my mom or by my parents? And really looking from that point of view, and it gives me not just my point of view or my perspective as a parent, but also allows me to have the point of view or be more aware of the point of view of my children.
Right. And it's not about being a doormat. We're not talking about being a doormat, like saying, like when kids are like totally over the edge, thinking that that's okay, or that that it's okay for them like to be awful. You know what I mean? It's like,
and I think especially with children, because, you know, all the points of views we have about how, you know, vulnerable or how they need protection, we have all these points of view. So children become a subject where we have such polarized points of views, where, and it shows up more as like good parent, bad parent. And it's like, so like there's so much judgment around children, and that there's a right way to be with children and that there's a wrong way to be with children. And it's, I rarely ever see people be the question of what's actually going to work here.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like they're the two extremes, right? There's the, oh, we need to protect them because they're so weak and feeble on the one hand, and then there's the other one, which is we're going to control them, we're going to force them into being who we want them to be, and we're not going to let them have these like character defects that we don't want them to have, right? And yeah. neither one of those works at all.
I mean, for me, with my kids, like, I say this, like, when they have quote unquote character defects, like, I don't try to protect them from it. It's almost, to me, it's like time to celebrate, because for me, the most important thing is for them to have an awareness of themselves and what works for them and what doesn't work for them. My daughter had a school project. They're working on the Constitution. And so her project was to come home and talk to the family and create a family constitution. It was interesting as we were going through, you know, working on the preamble, you know, with something like we, the family Williams, in order, you know, we looked at the values of our family. It was really about everyone enjoying each other and everyone being happy to, you know.
How cool is that?
And when we were doing this, I almost felt guilty, because I know that that's not what you're supposed to do or be as a parent. And it was just really interesting that as we sat as a family doing this exercise, and I have been asking my wife this question a lot, is like, what, like, because when you're growing up in a family, there's usually, like, with the parents, there's usually something that one or both of the parents value, and it comes out of their mouth, and it's through their actions, and it's just who they are, that as you go through life, it just becomes a part of your reality, whether you align and agree with it and you keep carrying the flag, or it's something that you resist and you rebel against your whole life. There's usually key characteristics about your parents that you deal with pretty much your whole life. And so I was asking my wife, like, what is it? Because we don't really have rules in the house. I mean, kids don't really have chores. We don't really have rules, and we don't really preach. And I was looking at, so, but what comes through the way that we are as a family? And that's what it was. It's really that we ask our kids, one, to be responsible for their own happiness. I mean, I even my four-year-old, you know, I look at him and I ask him, I say, whose job is it to make you happy? And before I could even tell him what the answer was, he just looked at me and said, it's my job.
Aww.
And again, like when I'm having this conversation, I like hear this voice on my shoulder saying, you can't say that. You can't do that. That's not. but But it is actually the way that it is. And do the kids always get it? No. But at least for us, it's a place that we can always go back to. So whenever anyone's getting upset or the kids are fighting, we just start to ask questions, and it's like they remember and they realize that they don't have to choose the same thing that everyone else chooses, that they have other choices available.
Okay, so we're going to take a break, and we're going to pick right back up there because I love this whole thing of choice and choice creates. So we'll be back, everybody, in just a sec. Come on.
Change your world. Change your life. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
What would you say if I told you that you could change your life in only 1 hour and all while lying down relaxing? Thousands of people all over the world have. What am I talking about? It's called Access Consciousness, the BARS. The BARS is an energetic body process that contains 32 different points on your head that, when run, assist you in releasing decisions about any area of your life that you have made solid and, as a result, cannot change. The BARS is the first class in Access Consciousness, a dynamic set of tools and information designed to transform any area of your life. When you have a BARS session, the worst that can happen is you feel like you had a fantastic massage. The best thing that can happen is your whole life could change. Go to accessconsciousness.com today to find a facilitator, to schedule a private session, or to find a BARS class in your area. Are you willing to give yourself an hour to change your life?
What if there's nothing wrong with you? What if you're far greater than you've ever given yourself credit for? What if it's time to know the gift and the contribution you are to the world and to like yourself a lot more? Hi, my name is Dane here. 13 years ago, I started to truly ask questions. Actually, I started to be the question, and everything changed for me. Asking questions opens doors to infinite possibilities. And it's not about finding the answer. It's about being the question, always. What I'm inviting you to step into is something that Einstein, Marie Curie, Newton, Da Vinci, Gandhi, Picasso, and Aristotle all knew to be true. What if no question is too big or too small? What if anything is possible for you? What if together we could create a kinder, gentler, happier world? Is now the time? Go to beingyouclass.com and sign up for a free video series, My Gift to You. Beingyouclass.com. What if you, truly being you, are the gift and change this world requires? Beingyouclass.com.
You are listening to Beyond Saying Thank You, presented by Access Consciousness. To join in today's conversation, call us toll-free in North America at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. Or send an email to radio@beyondsayingthankyou.com. Now, back to Beyond Saying Thank You.
Hey, everybody. It's Ann Maxwell, and we're back again with Ricky Williams. Hey, Ricky.
Hey, what's up, Ann?
Hey, we were just talking about choice in kids, and one of the things that I love asking kids is, or saying to them, really asking the question, but sort of a rhetorical question, do you get that when you, the choices that you make today, actually are creating your future, you know, like with older kids? And this whole idea that choice creates, but so if you can choose to do your homework or choose to not do your homework, and so what do you create when you choose to not do it, and what do you create when you choose to do it? You know, just as an example, and it's a wonderful way of talking with, or sort of getting kids to have the awareness that they really are in charge of their lives. It's something that's hard for parents who do the helicopter thing and try to control everything that their kids say and do. But if, to the extent that you don't be a helicopter, and that you actually ask kids questions like, so what's that going to create, without having a particular opinion or point of view about whether it's the right choice or the wrong choice. Like, all those behavior programs that I was trained in when I was in the residential treatment center about making a good choice and not making a bad choice. It's like, choice is choice, and it's just a choice, right? It either works for you or it doesn't. And so, yeah. I can't remember what it was that you said about choice, but it was something very profound, and we had to take a break right then. So,
well, it's really what you're talking about, and really giving kids the awareness that they do have choice. And, you know, when I've had a similar conversation with educators and with parents, and to a lesser extent with kids, and talking about, okay, you know, kids think that they have to do their homework. And one of the things I learned, with especially my son, is, like, he's so willful. Like, I can do whatever I want. I can't make him do anything.
Which one, the 12-year-old or the little one?
The 12-year-old. Well,
yeah.
The 4-year-old, too, but that's a whole other story. The 12-year-old is so willful, I can't make him do anything. And so I can ask him, and I can, you know, make him stay up all night trying to finish his homework, but ultimately it just makes him try to find, you know, more and more clever ways to do what he's going to do anyway. And
right.
So I found it's just been so much more effective to let him know that he has choice, and also to ask that same question of, okay, if you choose to do this, what is it going to create? If you choose to do this, what is it going to create? And it had a different effect than what I thought. I thought it would, you know, he would fight me and he would rebel. But what it actually empowered him to see that he actually did have choice. And
right.
It might not be the choice that he would like to have, but it started to empower him to see that he does have choice. And he has much more control over his life than he thinks.
Yeah, I had a client who's since moved out of state, but he was 10 or 11, and he's one of those kids that's described as difficult to get along with. He's just brilliant and sort of short on the social skills side. He functions so fast, and he has so little patience for people who can't keep up with him and who act like they're less than who they are. I mean, he's just brilliant. But anyway, he doesn't have a lot of friends, and periodically he has a friend. And so this was in one of those moments where he had a friend, and this friend was having a birthday. And so he invited him to the birthday party. And then my client also had, there was a kid in the class who was his nemesis, who he just couldn't stand this kid. And so his nemesis talked his friend into disinviting him. So he was invited to the birthday party, and then he was disinvited. And he was so mad. And he came in to see me, and he spent about half an hour, 40 minutes, just railing on about all the ways he was going to get even and all the things he was going to do. And I thought he was hilarious, right? And I was asking him questions like, huh, I wonder what that's going to do, and I wonder what they're going to say, and huh. And, you know, blah, blah. And I really didn't have any point of view. He's not my kid. And I got that he was just, by me being the space that let him say all these outrageous things and not come crashing down on him, or not try to make him talk him into a different way of being or whatever, I just let him go. And at the end, I said, well, so have a great week and I'll see you next week. And it turned out that the shift that occurred in the room was so huge that he ended up getting invited to the birthday party, right? The birthday boy changed his mind and invited him, and he had a great time. And it's almost, you know, like when you're the, what I get is that when you're the space with kids to let them spin out whatever it is, they get to choose, right? So choice creates, Ricky, right? Isn't it true that when you choose something, there's an energy that's created by the choice that you make, and you know what that choice is going to be like. You know how it's going to work out. You get it, maybe not cognitively, but you get it energetically. Like back in the days when you were dating, right? And you asked somebody out on a, you asked a girl out on a date. Didn't you always know how it was going to turn out? Or if some girl was hustling you and you said yes, right? Didn't you always know? I mean, you always know that stuff, right?
But especially if you're talking about me and dating girls in high school, I know it's like that I knew exactly how it was going to turn out, and somehow I wanted to prove that it would be different. But yeah, I knew. and also with choice, and you know, there's also this piece that when you choose something, you always become more aware because you chose. And it's like we like to say, choice creates awareness.
Right.
And you know, mentioning, like you mentioning about how, you know, when kids are flipping out or freaking out, to allow them to have that choice, like you said, it doesn't mean you're a doormat and you let your kids do whatever they'd want to do. It's you allow them to choose and you can assist them in realizing that, one, they had a choice, and two, that it created something, and three, that, okay, now what are you aware of?
Right,
and
exactly.
To me, like, that piece right there, if kids can get that, it's like you're giving them, you're teaching them how to fish. You're teaching them how to be functional in this reality. Because if they don't have that, then they're always looking for, they're always looking for the right answer.
And right.
And it keeps them from really acknowledging and valuing what they know.
There's such a difference energetically between saying to a kid, "Don't do that," and, for example, with a little guy who was 18 months old who was running up to the hot grill, right? Summertime grilling, outdoor grilling, and he was driving his mom crazy. And she said, "I don't know what to do." And I said, "Well, just give him the information. Can you give him the information that if he touches that thing, it's going to really hurt, right? It's going to be a big owie. And then just let him do it. If that's what he does, he'll only do it once. He won't ever do it again for the rest of his life, right?" And she sort of swallowed and said, "Okay." And she did. She said, "You know what? If you touch that grill, it's going to hurt. It's going to really hurt. Look, feel the heat." And she took his hand right up to the edge of it. And he quit fooling around. He quit running up to it and acting like he was going to touch it, because he got that the choice, if he chose to touch it, it would really hurt. And as soon as she stopped having a point of view about whether he burned himself or not, which may sound heartless, but it's not, he quit doing it, right?
Can you talk more about that piece? Because I know, you know, when people come to class and these kind of topics come up, there's that fear of, especially as a parent and especially with children, that fear of being wrong or that fear of being heartless.
So one of the things that I love to talk about is to ask this question of parents. So who's responsible for the choices that your kids make? And many parents will say that they are. And it's almost like that's one of the things that parents get taught or trained to be, is responsible for the choices that their kids make. But the thing that creates is twofold. One is that you then think you have to control your kids and that you're in charge of your kids when you're actually not and when you can't control them. And the other thing that it does is it robs your kids of the experience of knowing what their choices actually do create. Because if they choose something and then everybody runs interference, they don't get what that choice actually would have created, because everybody else is in their face telling them that they're either wrong or bad or shouldn't be doing it or should be doing something else or blah blah blah, and they don't get that experience. So it's like a twofold thing. And this thing about this guilt is really, it's the guilt is like fake, you know, and I don't mean that parents who feel guilty are fake, but guilt is one of those things that's used to control you and to make you feel bad about not knowing what you actually do know and about doing what you know isn't going to work, right? It's a way that certainly I was manipulated when I was growing up. It's a really effective way that people have of controlling each other and manipulating each other is by making them feel guilty. And it's one of the best ways that you have of tearing yourself down and judging yourself and feeling bad about who you are, is to make yourself feel guilty for something that actually isn't even yours to begin with, right?
Wow. Yep.
Yeah. Remember that little guy in Chicago with the water bottle? And he was drinking water out of the water bottle and dumped it all over himself, and he wanted more. And his mom said, "No, look, you got your shirt all wet," and he screamed. And I said to his mom, like, "Whose shirt is it?" And she really got it. And I filled I put water in the water bottle with ice cubes. It was ice cold. And she said, "Okay, you can have water." And so I He was 21 months old. He was too little to do it himself. And so I put ice cold water in it and I gave it to him, and he ran back to his mom and he put it down on the floor in front of her. He goes, "No, mama, no, mama, no." And he's rubbing his sopping wet shirt, telling her, no, he's not going to pour ice water down his front, because it was really clear that that's where this next amount of water was going to go, was right back down his front again, because the water bottle was too big for him to handle. But when she said, no, you can't have water because you spilled it on you, he screamed bloody hell at her. But when she said, yeah, you can have some more if you want, and I put ice cubes in the water bottle, he got to tap into the energy of what that choice would create for him, which was not only more water down his front, but ice cold water down his front. He chose something else, right? Like that.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Fun stuff. I know. I know. I know. I know. So, you know what? We're out of time, Ricky.
No way.
We are. Oh, my God. I just totally missed all the... We have these great tech people that tell us how few minutes we have left, and we're down to 30 seconds. So, I'm just going to say thank you so much for being on today. It's been absolutely wonderful having you again.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And for all of you, next week will be Susanna. And Gary Douglas and Dane here are on every Thursday at 2:00 Pacific time. So thank you, everybody, and we'll catch you soon.
Thank you for listening to Beyond Saying Thank You. Join us again next Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Be sure to check out AccessConsciousness.com to find out more about us and about Access. Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.